Paradise, Genesis 2, verse 8. And Jehovah God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. Here arises before us a whole sea of questions concerning paradise. In the first place, the word itself, whether it be Hebrew, Chaldean, or Persian, for I do not think it is Greek, though Suidas endeavors to discover a Greek origin, is rendered by the Latins hortus, a garden. This garden, Moses says, was planted in Eden. For this name of the place is not appellative or descriptive, as our translation renders it, paradise of pleasure. Eden does indeed signify pleasure or delight, and from this name of the garden is doubtless formed the Greek word Adona. But the preposition being here added to it plainly proves that Eden is in this place to be taken for the proper name of a place, which is further proved by the particular description of the place, for the garden is said to have been to the eastward of it. Our translation renders it from the beginning, which is also a bad version of the expression, for the original term, which does not properly signify from the beginning, but in front, that is, according to our mode of expression and meaning, toward the east. For the original word is an adverb of place, not of time. Hence there arises here another matter of dispute as to where paradise is. Commentators puzzle and rack themselves on this point in an extraordinary manner. Some will have its situation to be under the equator between the two tropics. Others say it must have been a more temperate atmosphere to cause a place to be so richly and abundantly productive. But why should I proceed? Opinions upon the subject are beyond number. My short and simple reply to them all is that every question upon a place or thing which no longer exists is idle and useless. For Moses is here describing things which occurred before the flood and even before sin was in the world, whereas we have to deal with things as they were and are since the sin of Adam and since the deluge. My belief is, therefore, that this spot of earth was called Eden, either by Adam, or in the time of Adam, on account of that astonishing productiveness and that delightful pleasurableness which Adam experienced in it, and that the name of a place so delightful remained with posterity long after the place itself was lost and gone, just as the names of Rome, Athens, and Carthage exist among us at this day, though scarcely any traces of those mighty states and kingdoms can now be discovered. For time and the curse, which sin's merit, consume all things. When, therefore, the world with all the men and beasts upon it was destroyed by the flood, this noble and beautiful garden perished also, and all traces of it were washed away from the face of the earth. In vain, therefore, do Origen and others enter upon their absurd disputations. The text, moreover, says that this garden was guarded by an angel, lest anyone should enter it. Even if this garden, therefore, had not perished by the curse which followed, as doubtless it did, yet man's entrance into it is thus absolutely and forever prevented, as is indicated by the guardian angel's flaming sword. Its place can nowhere be found. This latter answer concerning the curse might be given to all questioners and disputers, though the former argue concerning the inevitable consequences of the deluge, I deem less imaginative and more conclusive. But what shall we say to that text of the New Testament, "Today shalt thou be with me in paradise," Luke 23:43, and to that passage also, "He was caught up into paradise," 2 Corinthians 12:4. I have no hesitation whatever in affirming that Christ did not go with the thief into any corporal place, for that point is made quite plain from the case of Paul, who says that he knew not whether he was in the body or out of the body, verses 2 and 3. Wherefore, my opinion is that in each case by paradise is meant that condition or state in which Adam was when in paradise, full of peace and rest and safety, and full of all those gifts of blessedness which are enjoyed where there is no sin and no death. As if Christ had said, "Today shalt thou be with me in paradise, free from sin and safe from death." just as Adam in paradise was free from sin and from all death and from all curse. Thus, I believe paradise to be a paradise state, just as the Scriptures, when speaking of the bosom of Abraham, does not mean the very fold of the robe which covered the bosom of Abraham, but descriptively that life or state of life in which the souls of the departed enjoy the heavenly life and the peace and rest which remain for the people of God. Hebrews 4:9. Wherefore, my testimony concerning this text is that Moses is here giving us an historical description and informing us that there was a certain place toward the east in which there was a most beautiful and fruitful garden. For as I have said, the Hebrew expression properly signifies a place, not a time, as our version improperly renders it. Hence, it is usual with the Hebrews to call the east wind Kadim, a dry, cold wind, which parches the fields. In that region of the world, therefore, was paradise, or a garden, in which there were no tale trees, nor oaks, nor scarlet oaks, nor any other trees that were barren, but the richest and noblest fruits of every kind, and trees of the noblest description, such as we now deem those to be, which bear cinnamon and the richest spices. And although all the rest of the earth was cultivated, for there were as yet no thistles nor thorns, yet this place had its far higher cultivation. This Eden was a delightful garden, exceeding in cultivation and fecundity the whole earth besides. Though all the rest of the earth, if compared with its present miserable condition, was itself a paradise. It was in this garden, which he himself had planted with such peculiar care, that the Lord placed man. All these things, I say, are historical. It is idle for us, therefore, to inquire at the present day where or what that garden was. The rivers, of which Moses afterwards speaks, prove that the region of its situation comprehended Syria, Mesopotamia, Damascus, and Egypt. And it is in the midst of these, as it were, that Jerusalem is situated. And as this garden was destined for Adam with his posterity, it is in vain for us to imagine it to have been a confined garden of a few miles extent. It was doubtless the greater and better part of the earth. And my judgment is that this garden continued until the deluge, and that before the flood it was protected by God himself, according to the description of Moses, by a guard of angels, so that I believe it to have been a place well known to the posterity of Adam, though inaccessible to them. And my opinion is that it continued thus known until the flood utterly destroyed it and left no traces of it remaining. Such is my mind on this subject, and such is my reply to all questions which over-curious men would move concerning a place which after the sin and the deluge had no longer any existence or trace of former existence. Origen, however, is dissatisfied with any view of the extent of the Garden of Eden, corresponding to that which I have taken. His opinion is that the distance of the rivers ought by no means to determine the dimensions of the garden, but he is thinking all the time about such gardens as we now generally cultivate. Hence, he has recourse in his usual way to an allegory. He makes paradise to represent heaven, the trees, angels, and the streams of rivers, wisdom. But these triflings are unworthy a divine. They may perhaps not be unbecoming an imaginative poet, but they are out of place in a theologian. Origen bears not in mind that Moses is here writing a history, and that, too, a record of things now long ago passed away. After this same fashion do our adversaries absurdly dispute at the present day, holding that the image and similitude of God still remain even in a wicked man. They would, in my judgment, speak much nearer the truth if they were to say that the image of God in man has perished and disappeared, just as the original world and paradise have done. Man in the beginning was righteous. The world in the beginning was most beautiful. Eden was in truth a garden of delight and of pleasure. But all these things were deformed by sin and remain deformed still. all creatures, yea, even the sun and the moon, have, as it were, put on sackcloth. They were all originally good, but by sin and the curse they became defiled and noxious. At length came the greater curse of the flood, which destroyed paradise and the whole human race, and swept them from the face of the earth. For if at this day rivers, bursting their banks, inflict by their floods such mighty calamities on men, beasts, and fields, what must we suppose to have been the awfulness and horror of the calamities brought upon the earth by the universal deluge? Whenever, therefore, we would speak of paradise since the flood, let us speak of that now historical paradise, which was once, but no longer has, existence in any trace. Let us speak of it, just as we are compelled to speak of the original innocence of man. In doing so, our utmost effort can effect no more than to reflect with a sigh that it is lost, and that we never can repair or regain it in this life. But further, as Moses had before distinguished man in various ways from the brutes, which nevertheless have the same origin as we, brutes being formed like us from the earth, so the divine historian in this place distinguishes man from every other creature by giving a description of that peculiarly delightful garden and that superb dwelling place which God had planted with great care and culture and prepared with magnificent splendor, far beyond anything of the kind which he had bestowed on any other spot upon the face of the earth at that time. For the principal object of Moses in his sacred record of the creation of man was to cause it to be clearly understood that man was by far the noblest and most excellent creature which God had made. The brute animals had the earth, on the grass of which they might feed, but for man God himself prepared a more noble dwelling place, in the cultivation and adorning of which he might labor with extreme pleasure, and in which he might find his food, separated from the beasts indeed, but nevertheless holding all of them throughout the whole earth under his dominion. Therefore, Origen, Jerome, and all the other allegorists are alike involved in the greatest folly, who, because they can no longer find a paradise on the face of the earth, think that some other sense than the natural one is to be given in its interpretation. But that there was a paradise, and that there is a paradise, are two very different subjects for consideration. Moses, as is the general nature of all such narrations, merely records that there was a paradise. The case is the same in reference to Adam's dominion over all the beasts. He could call the lion and command and manage him, according to his will and pleasure, but it is not so now. All these glorious things are no more. They are simply and merely, though sacredly, recorded by Moses as having been in the beginning. Another question is agitated as to the spot of the earth where God created man. There are some who maintain with great warmth that he was created in or near Damascus, because they find it recorded that the soil of Damascus is red and fertile. But I pass by all idle and vain inquiries of this description. It is enough for us to know that man was formed out of the earth on the sixth day, after all the other animals had been created, and that he was placed by God himself in the Garden of Eden. But as to the very spot on which he was created, what necessity is there for our knowing that? It is certain that he was created out of paradise, for the text before us declares that he was removed to or placed in paradise, before Eve was created, who, as Moses here shows, was created in paradise. Now let us proceed to that which follows.